Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my God. I played it. Mommy, you're going to have to take it because I played it a second too soon.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Darlings, this is Mummy, Sybil Brunson. Bonjour, mes amis. Typically, on the night before election night, we lost our overture tonight. I don't know what happened. Our house orchestra, I guess, decided to go on strike. Or maybe they're already lined up at the election polls overnight to vote. Maybe they're being responsible. Normally, we have our music playing, our wonderful jingle. And I am coming to you live from Central Standard Time. I am in Memphis, Tennessee, as this very moment. I'm in Memphis. Yes, we've had tornado watches and tornado warnings. We've had unbelievable storms. It was pouring for about 3.5 hours nonstop. We have more storms moving up the Mississippi River right now across from Arkansas and everything. And my wonderful, wonderful, brilliant, but slightly befuddled and incommoded, shall we say, producer Gwendolyn Holden Berry is in New York right now. She's in our sound booth high atop the Chrysler Building, the revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin. I will put Gwendolyn on tonight, off and on, just depending on what she is doing as far as her toilet duties. She is completely tied up in knots over the election tomorrow, and who can blame her? She is not a young girl. I won't tell you how old she is. We're about the same age. But her intestinal system is not designed to withstand the incredible pressures and turmoil of this election cycle. And I am in complete sympathy for her. It's only because I've got a summer stock tummy. I have a summer stock stomach is what it is called. And it means that you can go all around the country doing dinner theater productions of King Lear, Hamlet, and Come Blow Your Horn and not have a problem with your tummy. But Gwendolyn has never been like that. Gwendolyn, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm fine. And Mommy, I've tuned up the orchestra. So stand by for 30 seconds, please.
Well, there we are.
Mommy, I want you to know that last night on our political show with our author guests and authorities on the election, we wanted to go off on a high note. So we paid some dues to Sybil Brunson by playing that as our going out.
Great. I have a quick question. Did people hear any of the show before the musical overture, or was that not on the air yet?
No, we're in there, baby. We're in there.
Okay. So we dropped this week. We dropped the overture 2 minutes into the show, and we already had started the show, but we had the overture. And you know what? Let's just drop the overture wherever it falls from 1 week to the next. You know, maybe we'll do it as a halftime thing, as a halftime performance without a wardrobe malfunction. Maybe we'll do that. Anyway, I'm back with Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, of course, is my producer. This is Come Now, Don't Sulk, and this is part of the Here Be Monsters Network. Come Now, Don't Sulk is a new radio broadcast, a podcast brought to you by the Here Be Monsters Network, which is on Blog Talk Radio. And I just want to mention to you that our sponsor every week is DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, a wonderful line of dozens, scores of products that are essential oil products and are consciousness-raising and expanding products. Do go to their website, that's DaughtersOfIsis.com, that's all one word, and check out their wonderful products. We've been telling you about them every week, and Mummy has been wearing some of them, and I've actually been spraying them on my bed sheets when I've been traveling. As you all know, I'm traveling nonstop over these last several months, and Gwendolyn has provided me with an array of their products, which I pack. I have to pack the small size ones because, of course, the naughty airport people won't let me bring on anything that larger than 3 ounce sizes. So I have to bring like little tiny bottles of them, and I decant them and put them in the little travel size bottles, and I spray them on my pillows, on my sheets, on my handkerchief, on everything. And I've been having the most wonderful dreams, even in Minot, North Dakota, even in Aberdeen, South Dakota. I've been in the red states, I've been in the blue states, I've been in the purple states, I've been in every state. And I'm so grateful to DaughtersOfIsis.com for expanding my consciousness and lengthening my fuse. I think the Gwendolyn, we're going to have to put that in the sales package too. It not only is mind expanding and spiritually expanding, it also will lengthen your fuse. And I don't need sexual laughter from the men in the audience right now. I don't need that. It was not meant to be a sexual thing. It will lengthen your fuse. You can deal with the most incredibly intransigent people, and your fuse will just remain long, and you can deal with all sorts of chicanery and malfeasance and all sorts of the mendacity if you use the DaughtersOfIsis.com. As a matter of fact, before we go any farther, Gwendolyn, if someone had a patience problem, if someone had a problem with being patient either with strangers or coworkers or especially family members during this tumultuous time, what would be the fragrance or the product that they would buy from Daughters of Isis? What would they be getting from Daughters of Isis that would help expand them and make them a little bit more at peace with nonsense?
Well, that's easy. That's real easy. That would be sweetgrass. Sweetgrass.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's that vanilla-like sweetgrass that you find in many of the New Age mystical stores and such. It's basically sweetgrass that's grown indigenously, and the best of it comes out of Canada. You've seen the braids that go along with the white sage bundles and stuff. And sweetgrass, its properties are, among the nations, that they burn these braids. You know, Indians will throw the sweetgrass onto
right.
their dashboards and let them get real crisp so they can throw them into the fire and create what they call sweet smoke, which you walk through. And what it does...
And isn't sage what you clean an apartment with before you move in? You sage the apartment before you do it?
It makes things...
Is that the same thing?
Yes. No. You first use the sage to use the smoke to make a place sacred, and then you burn the sweetgrass to call good spirits. It just calls good spirits. So the sweetgrass is also our rescue remedy. And it has a very sweet, very vanilla-like, but you know it's sweetgrass, and it's just a wonderful scent. It's not overwhelming, but it's enveloping.
And are you using that in one of the products? Because I know that you compile whole bunches of products, whole bunches of oils in different special recipes of yours. Is that sweetgrass? Is that in one of the others? One of the other products,
also,
or do you sell it separately?
I have a regular sweetgrass, which is just the sweetgrass oil with the spirit essence, and then with our white sage, we created a white sage mess with the white sage essential oil, and then I put some of the sweetgrass spirit essence, which is the alcohol extraction, into it's like a perfume. You know, you put it on your skin and the alcohol dries up and you smell nothing but the herb. That we put into the white sage, and you get that white sage scent, which is cleansing first, and then all of a sudden you smell the sweetgrass. So that is another thing that we do that's unique to the company. Do I use the sweetgrass oil in other blends? Yes, there are some blends that I put it into.
All right, well, I'm going to go on the website tonight after the show, and I'm going to check out some different things, and we will talk about that after the show when we do our wonderful after cast party, long-distance cast party tonight after the show. But folks, do look up different products, including sweetgrass, on DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, and I can't recommend their products enough. They have definitely been a great traveling companion for me while I've been going all over. Speaking of which, I am in Memphis, Tennessee tonight. I will be here for a couple of days, then I'm going on to Nashville, the capital of Tennessee. It's interesting that I will be in Memphis on Election Day. I can't imagine what it would be like to be in Nashville, the capital. I'm sure that Nashville is absolutely boiling over today with energy and controversy. Tennessee is one of the several states that is very much up for grabs and is very much a hotbed of red-blue activity. It's interesting that this the fluke that brought me on these travels, being George's Gal Friday, if you will, Girl Friday, which started several months ago, it's been such an opportune or such a stroke of luck to be traveling around the country like John Steinbeck, Travels with Charlie. Of course, George is no dog. It's so interesting to be traveling all around the country and to be going from the largest cities to the smallest towns and villages and hamlets. I have been all over the place, and I've not only been all over the place, I've been going back to places. This is my second trip to Memphis. Yesterday was my second trip to Tampa, St. Pete. We were in Clearwater. We're going all over. We're going to the big cities, the suburbs, and we're seeing it all. And I am very lucky because I get to meet and talk with people in all walks of life, at all levels of income, at all levels of education. It's amazing to experience the country during this very, very revolutionary, if you will, time. I've often talked to you all, Gwendolyn and I talk about this, about where were you a year ago? Where were you 5 years ago? Where were you on September 11th? Where were you when John Kennedy was assassinated? For those of us that are sensitive to time and place and the spirituality and the feelings and the intellectual ideas that go with time and place and space, it's absolutely astounding to me that it was 2 years ago, basically tonight, that we were in the process of the 2016 election. And I don't know about the rest of you, but that feels like a century ago to me. I do not. I've often said this, and I know this is one of Mummy's boring, lecturettes, where I say that life feels very long. Life does not feel short to me, and I hope that I continue that way right to my deathbed. If I have the misfortune to be on a deathbed and to know what's happening as opposed to going instantly, I hope that if I'm reflecting on my life, I don't suddenly at the end of my life say, oh, dear God, is that all there is? It flashed by me in minutes. I don't want to be Peggy Lee singing, is that all there is? I would like to. I would like to, although I do that song in my nightclub act, and I enjoy doing it, and I make it quite funny, but I don't want that to be my epitaph. And I have felt all my life that life is huge. I have not done nearly the number of things that I'd like to do, and I have not traveled to nearly the number of places I would like to travel. But whatever I have done, I have been very lucky to feel that my life was huge and complex and long and adventuresome. I do not feel that my life has slipped through my fingers, unknown and unnoticed and unappreciated. I feel that when I talk to people who say that their lives have gone by very quickly, I try not to, I certainly don't gloat, but what I do question is, did they perhaps make the mistake of getting a job in a company in a cubicle, and they did that same job in that same cubicle for 35 years? Did they live a Donna Reed kind of life? You know, did they live it to Beaver type of life, where they sort of bought into the American dream, they sat in a cubicle, and then suddenly, you know, when they turned 60, they were given a gold-plated watch, a handshake, and a boot out the door, and they wondered where their life had gone, and they retired, and then 2 years later died because they didn't know what to do with themselves. I feel that if I've changed my life over and over again. I have met new people. I have gone through terrible tragedies, the AIDS crisis. I lost most of the people I ever knew. I have met new people. I have had many different jobs, many different careers. The very act of being an artist and a performer and a writer means that you've had to subsidize yourself repeatedly in all sorts of different ways, and perhaps that's why life seems big to me. Apropos of that, darlings, I marvel that it was only 2 years ago that we sat and watched our TVs and were all on the edge of our seats the night before the election of 2016. And some of us were foolish enough, or I won't say foolish. Some of us were credulous enough to believe that everything was going to be just fine. And some of us, myself included, were doubtful. And I know a lot of people who were not doubtful back then say, oh, I always was doubtful. And I have the proof on Facebook to prove that you were not doubtful. I have very close friends who foolishly touted Hillary Clinton's forlorn 4-point lead or whatever it was, and blasted it through the airwaves and through the internet, you know, oh, well, it's a breeze. She's going to be in, she's going to win, blah, 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 blah. It's almost like they were characters in Dr. Seuss books with those wonderful, you know, hoo hollerers and horn blowers and those cartoony characters in The Grinch That Stole Christmas with people stacked on top of people with horns and devices and everything, and they're saluting the skies with the good news. And of course it all fell down Tuesday night. You know, it was all a disaster. I had begged people not to listen to the forecasts. I had begged people to ignore the hoo-hollers on MSNBC, on NBC, on CBS. I begged them not to believe that, and I begged them not to spread that word around, lest there would be voters who were lazy and who would not get to the polls. And of course, we saw what happened. She won the popular vote, but she did not win the popular vote in enough places to win, and the electoral vote. And we have lived now for under 2 years with Trump and that whole situation. I marvel that not only was it only 2 years ago was election night, not 22 years ago, but that we have not actually lived for 2 full years with him as president. And I would be willing to bet my left leg, that Time magazine will make him the man of the year again, not because he's a hero, but because he has literally swallowed all news, all headlines. There has never been a person, not Adolf Hitler, not Franklin Roosevelt, there has never been a person who has literally sucked the air out of not the room, the entire country and half of the world. He is the front page news every day, everywhere. He is front page news in Russia. He is front page news in Russia, in China. He is front page news in Madagascar. And he will be, I'm sure, Time's Man of the Year again this year. To think that we have not lived 2 years yet with him as president, and this is what we are living with: a $1 trillion deficit, tax breaks for the rich, a promised, forlorn, idiotic, fictional tax break for the middle class, which will be another, you know, $100 bill for every family of four. It'll go nowhere and mean nothing, but it'll drive up the deficit even higher. So it's just, it's a remarkable thing that we've lived less than 2 years with the election, and here we are on election night. I would like to say that I'm begging you, please ignore the forecasters, ignore the talking heads. It's not important whether you live in a blue state or a red state. You must go and vote. You must go and vote. Mummy lives in a democratic state, a democratic part of the state. I live in New York. I live in New York City. I live in Manhattan. I live on the Upper West Side. My vote means nothing there, and I still voted. Okay, my vote, everything that I would vote for, everything I did vote for, will happen on that ballot. I voted for the right person, the right this, the right that, and my election this year and my vote and is means nothing because I am where I am. But that does not mean that I did not vote. And I'm begging you, if you're in a red state and you're going to vote blue and you say, well, the state is red and that's just going to be red, I don't care. You go and you take the hand of two other people. You have two hands. I want you to grab someone in your left hand and someone in your right hand and march to the polls. Because if everybody did that, it's like litter. If everyone picked up one piece of litter, the earth would be immaculate. Okay? The earth would be immaculate. And one piece, if one person picks up one piece of litter, it's like everybody rolls their eyes and throws up their hands. Oh, you picked up one candy wrapper on, you know, I-66. Who cares? But if everyone picked up just one piece of litter, the world would be immaculate. It's like what the Bible says. If you light one candle, it's better to light one little candle than to curse the darkness. And if two people light candles, and if 200 people light candles, and if 2 million people light candles, Texas will be blue, and Florida will be blue, and Georgia will be blue, and Tennessee will be blue. But we have got to do something, and it's going to take us years to turn back the destruction that has been done, not over the last 2 years, let's just call a spade, over the last 20 years under George Bush II, and then all of what was done, you know, to Barack Obama during his age of civility when he tried to be a polite gentleman and cooperate and work with Congress and was screwed left and right daily, and now 2 years of Satan. So I'm asking you to please get off your asses and vote. And it's especially important now with voter suppression going on in places and the chicanery and malfeasance everywhere about voting. It is inexcusable. I don't think if we don't get this fixed voting, we are going to be setting up guillotines and lighting our torches in another 2 years. This is the kind of misbehavior, political misbehavior, that creates revolutions. Okay, and Americans are very short-sighted. They have short memories, and they don't study. This is France in 1789. This is Russia in 1918. This is where the middle class is trying to figure out whether they believe a total delusion and lie, or if they finally turn around and say, "Wait a minute, we are slipping farther and farther behind and down the latter." Okay? And it's so reminiscent of Germany in the 1930s, where people believed a snake oil salesman. And he basically was setting everything up so he could feed them and their children into a war machine. All of the xenophobia, all of the enemies within the walls, okay, gays, lesbians, Jews, people with disabilities, physical disabilities, mental disabilities, he chewed all of them up. Well, then once he got rid of all of them, he had to look across the border. Then it was Austria and Czechoslovakia and Hungary and Poland. And that's when it finally, he had been enabled repeatedly. If you enable a psychopath long enough, eventually they burn the house down. And that's what happened in Europe in 1930s and 40s. It was only when he crossed into Poland that finally Stalin, a psychopath himself, had to say, wait a minute, this has gone too far. I thought I had a deal with this guy. There's no honor. What's the old expression? There's no honor among thieves. There's no honor among psychopaths. You put two psychopaths in a room, it's like putting two piranhas in a fishbowl. Well, once they've eaten the goldfish, it's dinner time. That was the appetizer. Now they're looking at each other. And that's what happened there. You know, Poor, poor Neville Chamberlain, one of the saddest, sweetest-tempered people in the world. He just kept hoping for the best, hoping for the best, and of course, he was screwed. Winston Churchill was the person who had to draw the line. A bulldog, a British bulldog with a cigar, was the one who had to draw the line and say no. So we are heading in a strange way. You know, we've got our deodorant and our Jell-O, our Saran Wrap, and our high definition television. We've got all the props and the accoutrement of a first world country, although we are the crack whore of the world. You know, we're addicts. We're addicted to our Samsung TVs and our petroleum and our fracking. We're addicts, and we borrow money from our enemies. We borrow money from our friends. We borrow money from our enemies. We sell ourselves left and right. We are a crack whore. We are the three-toothed whore on the sidewalk who's lost her looks and is still doing anything she can on her knees to get her daily fix of crack. That's what the United States has become. There's no better metaphor for it. And if we do not straighten out, if we don't get to detox, if we don't get off our addictions and start to be responsible and stop servicing our pimps, we are going to be ruined. We're well on our way. I mean, our deficit is extraordinary. Who would run their home that way? Would you run your home? Well, you know what's funny about being a private citizen? You only can go so far on your credit cards before they come for you. Well, who's going to come for the United States when its credit cards have run out, when it's maxed itself out? Is that what we're seeing? Is the collection agency at the door of the United States? Is that where we're at right now? We're just continuing to print money. How soon before we print money so that we have wheelbarrows full of money going to the local bakery for a loaf of bread? Like that famous photograph of that man in Berlin in 1931, where you had to buy a loaf of bread by 8 in the morning because by 2 in the afternoon, it would be 2 wheelbarrows full of cash. Runaway inflation, craziness, insanity. And everyone thinks that Wall Street is America. As long as the rich are making more money and Wall Street's climbing, that's all that cares. And then, of course, these forlorn people who keep thinking it's going to trickle down. Has it trickled down for you? It hasn't trickled down for me. I haven't seen any of it. I'll tell you where that money's trickling down to. It's trickling down to the Cayman Islands. It's trickling down to bank accounts in Switzerland. That money is going elsewhere. Okay? And the problem with money today that's different from France in 1789 or in Russia in 1918, people who started to get worried in Russia in 1918 sewed their jewelry inside their hems and took a train out of Moscow and out of Russia. They couldn't get much out. In France, they quickly loaded up a carriage with as much, but they had to leave the estate behind. Today, 99% of a person's wealth can be switched over to another place that's safe over the internet. You simply go online and you simply press some buttons and enter some passcodes and your money goes from, you know, Toledo, Ohio to God knows where. Cap d'Antibes, I guess. So if you start to see your local one percenters leaving the country and boarding up their apartments, you get worried because they're taking the money with them. You know, it's not left here as the Chateau Fouilly, you know, which the crowd can storm and unload. You know, it's totally different. But this has gotten to be a very serious situation. I'm begging you, call your friends, call your family members, get people to vote. There is no room for any kind of laziness. I don't care if it's black, brown, yellow, or red laziness. I don't care if it's laziness of the old. I don't care if it's laziness of the young. That's one of the most depressing statistics right now, is that only a third of the young are going to vote. I had to post a comedy thing on my Facebook page about it. 12 people that Mummy discovered who are not voting and why. And it's a satire, but it's a satire based on fact. People have got to vote. I don't care if you're Jewish or Catholic or Hindu. I don't care if you're a paraplegic or an Olympic athlete. I don't care what your story is. You've got to go vote. Okay? All right, enough of that. We have a, oh my God, we have a tornado alert. Interesting. Well, if Mummy is suddenly sucked away to Oz, you can say, that's too bad. Listen, call in tonight because I want to cover some other subjects. The number here is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. I want to thank several of you for coming up with acronyms or whatever it would be for that. It was interesting. Dad, oh, God, Steve Buscher did some. Jan did some. There were a couple of them. I don't have them in front of me. I'll have to look them up. Remember that we're here every Monday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time now, I guess, 8 o'clock p.m. every Monday Eastern Standard Time. This is our last program before Election Day, and I know that many of you are scared to death. If you are scared to death, please run, do not walk, to Sybil Brunchen's Lollipop Guild on Facebook. Sybil Brunchen's Lollipop Guild is a page that is devoted only to happiness and happy thoughts, fun and funny posts. I do admit that I posted some please go and vote posts on there, but I did not say which way you're supposed to vote. We keep everything there non-controversial, and I know that some of you actually think that somebody exhorting you to vote is controversial. You know what I have to say to you? Screw you. Okay, there you go. You're done. No, for someone to get on the Lollipop Guild and say, please go and vote, that is not what we consider to be under the rules of controversy. I didn't say which way you're supposed to vote. I just said, please make sure you go and vote. couple of other things I wanted to mention. I mentioned last week that we were going to talk about misophonia, and I, for those of you that don't know, it's a syndrome where you're annoyed by certain kinds of sounds, specifically sounds that are repeated over and over and over again, and it's a syndrome that is kind of a neurosis actually, and I will open this by saying that I am extremely misophonic. I am someone who is, I have lots and lots of misophonia problems. So I'm very neurotic along those lines. There are certain noises that just drive me nuts. Blackboard, fingernails on a blackboard, of course. People singing off pitch in cabaret acts. like Bill Murray, when he would do his Star Wars medley in the early days of Saturday Night Live, would send me into paroxysms of laughter. When people sing off pitch, I'm immediately, it's one of the funniest things I can hear. I don't know why. It triggers instant laughter in me, like hysterical laughter. And so what I have to do is when I'm in a nightclub or a cabaret, if someone starts singing that way and starts singing off pitch, if they hit a couple of notes badly, I'm okay. If they continue to go on and on, a la Bill Murray with Star Wars, his Star Wars theme, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, YouTube it. I have to stifle myself. I become Mary Tyler Moore in the Chuckles the Clown episode. I have to literally, yes, there we go. See, hear Gwendolyn laughing? I have to get out of there. I have to get out of there because I'll start to laugh out loud at that kind of pitch problem thing. And it's really funny. The closer they are to the pitch, the funnier it is to me. See, if someone just out and out sings the song completely wrong, that's not funny. It's just, but when they're just off and they keep going just off, I could break ribs laughing at that stuff. But my misophonia problems that I don't like are unnecessarily loud eating. People who eat like really elaborately and perhaps even with their mouths open so that you can actually see time-lapse photography of the food changing in front of your very eyes and being well on its way to being digested and even chemically changed. I find that very disturbing. I find people who talk on the phone and eat. I see people like will talk on the phone and they'll be on their lunch break and they decide to discuss business or something. And they'll be talking on and chewing and eating and chewing and eating. And to the point where sometimes the words are unintelligible. Oh my God, drives me nuts. any talking out, there's loud talking. Oh my God, in a plane or in a restaurant, people sitting beside each other and talking as if they're trying to communicate with people on another floor. It's like, for heaven's sakes, what's going on? And of course, there's tons of that now. There's people on cell phones yakking at the top of their lungs when the technology of a phone actually allows you to whisper on a phone. You can actually talk more quietly on a phone than you can talk to the person sitting next to you under certain circumstances. I never understand it, but there are people who are determined to yowl under any circumstances. Amy Schumer addressed that herself. She said that the worst people about that are girls from the age of 7 to 27 seem to be like the loudest talkers. Now, it used to be men, and now it's become this thing of like girls screaming at the top of their lungs when they see each other for the first time across, like in a Starbucks. They'll be 30 feet apart, and they'll suddenly go, ah! Starbucks will stop dead while they, shriek and whatever. So,
well, mommy,
misophonia. Call in if you have your own. I see that I do have a caller, and I will take that caller. Thank you, Gwendolyn.
Just a moment. I'll open the mic, and it's a 916 area code. Go ahead, caller.
Okay. Hello, who's my caller?
Well, it's, let's see, Molly McGee. As in Fibber McGee and Molly.
Who is it really?
Jan.
Is it Jan?
Jan, yes.
Jan, okay.
Hi, honey. I just had to...
How are you, Jan? Well, Jan, I'm talking about misophonia. I'm talking about noises that make people crazy. What is a noise that makes you crazy? Or aren't you sensitive to sound?
Oh, definitely I'm with you on the eating thing, the sloppy and the chewing and the... Yeah. That's hard to take.
I mean, and if it's crunchy
never make
food,
a sound
I don't mind.
When I eat.
I don't mind crunchy food. I mean, what are you going to do with a Dorito? Of course it's going to crunch. But close your mouth over the Dorito. Don't chew like the Dorito's open. And then adorn the noise with smacking lips and then bits of the Dorito falling out on the table.
But you know what?
And while you're on the phone. Oh, my God. Oh, it's killed me with an ice pick.
Many, here's my thought, though.
What?
Many of the people we love very much, for other reasons, may be guilty of this. And we have to kind of like move beyond it, turn the volume down. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I don't know if you're referring to someone you know, but my own father was an appalling noisy eater. And oh my God, he slurped everything. He slurped everything. He didn't just slurp coffee and soup. He slurped water. He slurped lukewarm water. It's like, what's going on? You don't have to slurp air while you're drinking a glass of tepid water. What's going on? It's ridiculous. It reminds me of Streisand in The Way We Were. She's slurping her beer when she's with Hubble.
Oh, I got to watch that
again. And at one point,
again.
She keeps doing it. Yeah, she keeps doing it, and he finally chuckles. He chuckles at her. He laughs at her. And he doesn't bring it up. He just laughs at her. Yeah, it's
I
got to
watch
funny.
That again. I missed that, I think. Well, yeah, and then the crunching,
shocking.
The crunching is a big thing, and I love a person who loves their food, but keep it kind of quiet. Keep it to yourself.
I was in a restaurant today.
And tell yourself.
I was
yourself.
In a restaurant today. I was in a restaurant today, and I was alone in the restaurant except for a table behind me, two frat boys, and... They were not only loud, but what was especially disturbing was one of them insisted on belching all through his lunch. So he ate and belched at the same time. It was like, are you crazy? Are you crazy? I finally couldn't resist.
That's funny.
He let out a big one. And I couldn't resist.
Oh,
I turned around and looked at him, and I gave him my best Sybil Brunson, not glare. It's what's much worse for me is not a glare. It is the dead eye. I gave him the dead eye. And he sort
Are you serious?
Blinked.
Like, are you serious? Are you real?
He blinked. Yes,
oh,
and he blinked.
Well.
And then he sort of coughed and looked down. And his friend, who was back to me, said, "What's wrong?" And he looked at the table, and he took his head, and he said, "Nothing, nothing." And he didn't belch anymore.
Oh,
and it was like, I couldn't believe I was successful.
Maybe there was a lesson learned today, you think?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? It's funny. I'm curious as to other noises. Gwendolyn, is there a noise that drives you nuts?
Well, you hit one of the number ones. I can't abide that. My mother would have freaked if I even had a guest at the table who did that. I mean, we learned that as children. But
well, that doesn't happen anymore. But yeah,
I don't think
you're probably quite correct there. But you know what I don't like? I don't like people who. I guess you just have to call it road rage.
Mm.
And they make that noise with their car. It's the speed up and speed past you. I don't know how to explain.
That's scary.
That's scary to me.
Pees
me off.
Yes, I agree.
The revving engine on the highway.
I don't make eye contact with those people. Because you just never know. You know,
I agree.
Jan
is absolutely right. Jan is right.
Keep your eyes in your own lane and don't. Yeah, because.
Jan's right.
Yeah, you never know. It's crazy.
That is an interesting thing. And yeah, don't engage them. I have two other misophonias that drive me nuts. One is people, for instance, in Starbucks, not only talking too loud on their phones or to the person next to them, I marvel at people who whistle. Okay, so there's music on in the Starbucks or there's music on somewhere.
Yeah.
And people, or even in the plane, I was on one of these flights and someone decided to get on the plane and began tunelessly whistling. And by the way, not a tune. So they're not like Bing Crosby singing like a champion, like a brilliant whistler. They are whistling tunelessly. So it's tuneless, feeble, mouth fart whistling.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing? And I was in an Uber recently where someone continued to do that. It was a long ride. The driver? And the person whistled.
Well, you better not
tunelessly.
Say anything then.
Well, what I finally did say was, I said, I'm going to make a business call. Can I just ask you just to stop whistling while I'm on my call? And I wasn't making a business call at all, but I pretended to call my mother.
Did you fake it? Yeah, you faked it.
Yeah, I faked it. Well, my mother's been dead for years now, but I talked elaborately with my mother about what wonderful adventures I was having, and I talked to her about what a wonderful Uber driver you had.
And blah, blah, blah. The
cows that we were passing. There was a silo, and I was on, went on and on and on about everything, and my mother. And the other thing I can't bear.
Yeah.
And this usually happens in a restaurant or in a bar where someone is telling stories or laughing at stories and insists on clapping. So they punctuate their laughter and their story or their story appreciation with clapping. It's
with
like
a clap.
No, clap.
Not just one clap, many claps?
Oh, yes. One clap is disgusting. But they will clap maybe five or six times. And then during the hour – clap maybe 30 or 40 times so that any time they laugh, they must clap. This is when the Taliban should be called because it's definitely time to chop their hands off. This is when the Taliban happens to be right. That person deserves to have their hands cut off. And I am perfectly willing to bring the Taliban in to service that thing
in the
airport lounge. Yes. That restaurant, that Starbucks. Excuse me, you with the turban. Could you come over here with your scimitar and cut these hands off? Okay, I will pay you to do so. Because you all think of civil brunching as being so civilized, and now you see. Now you see exactly who I am and what I am.
I know the real you, so.
The
okay.
real me.
Oh,
yeah.
The
whole Aquarian love humanity is bullshit.
Yes.
I'm really a woman with a turban and a scimitar. That's the real me.
You are torn between two worlds. You are.
That's why Gwendolyn loves me so much. Gwendolyn, my producer, asked me because she knew that underneath that sweet frosting and sophistication of New England and European royalty beats the heart of a savage, you know, someone who's a cannibal, who would dine on her enemies just as much as look at them.
Who would dine on their bones.
Mummy, what do you do when people clink their spoon forever in stirring their coffee?
Okay, that's annoying. And yes, you stir it four or five times and then you're done. What I don't like is people that tap their silverware and play with their silverware on the table.
Oh.
They'll be banging their spoon, tapping. It's like, wait a minute, there's not a two-year-old at the table, which, by the way, is extremely annoying when parents let their children do that. But adults will suddenly be drumming the table, a glass-top table, with their silverware.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, get the turban, get the scimitar. There's another set of hands that have to come off at the wrist.
It has to be eliminated. Oh, that's funny.
That's so
really
weird.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to tell you something. And this is another thing where Jana's going to say, well, we have loved ones who do weird things, and we probably have to, you know, edit our reactions. I have been on the road now for months, and I want to tell you something. I think I'm going to set up Sybil Brunson's etiquette school. I have seen people holding their forks and knives in the most appalling way and lifting food into their faces. But I'm talking about holding their silverware and then twist it. They're going to have like carpal tunnel syndrome. They're shoveling their food with a fork. And no, shoveling at least is organic. It makes sense. It's ugly to look at when you see an adult holding a fork or a spoon like a three-year-old would. Or like you know,
a savage,
as if it's a garden space.
A savage three-year-old.
Yes. But I'm talking about holding their fork in a weird way, like stuck into their hand in a weird way, their fingers contracted around it, in which they've done that with the knife and the fork.
Oh, wow.
They're cutting their food.
Now, you know what,
and then they
you know what this is?
Well, wait, let me finish.
Oh,
this is what's
you know
weird.
What this is?
They switch the fork to the other hand, but then the hand has to pivot like 173 degrees to put the food in their mouth. It's like, wait a minute. You're going to get arthritis eating that way. That's not even logical. That's not the way a three-year-old would eat.
Well, here's the deal. I don't think they are taught anymore.
No, they're not. No.
How to really, I mean, that was part of junior high for me, as I recall, where we had like lessons on how to set a table, where the silverware goes. I don't think anybody knows what's that about anymore, and how to eat. And how to put the fork down and put the knife down and in between bites. They keep it in their hand. They're like ready to shovel the next batch in. It's stuff that isn't taught anymore. And I remember there's this great Fred Astaire quote about it's hard for children to know what manners are about if they don't see them anymore.
Right, right.
That was one thing
I was going to say.
And even more so now,
etiquette.
And he's talking about the 50s. So
Isn't that wild? That's 60 years ago. We've had two full generations that haven't learned anything. You know, but holding a door, as simple as holding a door, and more shocking than that, and this I really feel strongly about, holding a door and then saying thank you for the person who does hold the door.
Oh, absolutely.
The person who's holding a door, you turn, you make eye contact, and you say thank you.
And I must tell you something,
and I'm going to say something very racist right now, and people are going to gasp when I say this.
Mm-hmm.
White people have lousy manners. Do you know that when I hold a door for a black person, 99% of the time, black people will smile and say thank you when I'm walking through a door
you know why?
And a black person holds the door for me, I will say thank you, and they will say you're welcome.
They don't expect it. That's the thing.
That's right.
But what I will say is the people who do it for me are almost always other women.
Yeah.
And we make a contact like, oh, thank you. You know, it's because we miss that. That doesn't happen for us unless it's another woman doing it. And it could
Isn't
be a black
outrageous?
Woman, a white woman, or whatever. It's the men are, I don't know, maybe it's where I live or where I go or whatever. But
Always for your elders. That's the way I would
say it.
Always for
100%.
Your elders.
100%. And then women were supposed to get special treatment.
Anyway. I hold doors constantly for people, and I go out of my way to not only hold doors for people, but
I also,
when I'm on a plane, I will offer to help someone who's trying to get their suitcase up overhead.
Yes.
I mean, and I'm not young. I'm not young,
and I'm
certainly not strong like I was. But the bottom line is that I do those things, and it is remarkable how civility spreads. It is a pebble in the pond of life. You don't know where it's going to go, but those ripples spread outward. And people are not teaching their children this. Young people don't know how to shake hands anymore and look you in the eye.
They don't give a rat's ass, as my husband would say.
Wouldn't it be wonderful to see a video go viral from a plane of someone helping another person put their luggage up overhead?
That's a big deal. Because that's not easy.
Trouble.
You know, that's not easy. That's not like opening a door. Opening a door, you open the door, you hold it open while they go through, whatever. But lifting those bags up and pushing them around, that's not easy.
And then taking them down again, too, to help someone get the bag down.
Not easy. And it goes way above.
I want to ask Dan, because I think Jan's my only caller, and look at this. Our show is almost over. Jan, we only have a few minutes, so I'm going to ask you a quick question, okay? I'm going to ask you, because I was going to tell – I got asked this as a private message. Sybil, what are your favorite moments in Broadway history, your favorite show moments, your favorite – things, songs that happened that were iconic for you moments. Can you tell me one of your favorite moments of all time on Broadway that you saw, a song in a show? And can you think of one?
Well, you know, that's so hard for me because I've never lived close. I've visited and I've seen some wonderful shows.
But on a sound check, for instance, on a Broadway recording, when you hear a Broadway recording.
Well,
or you saw the
from
Tony.
My Fair Lady, you know, is my all-time favorite.
So would you say in the movie of My Fair Lady?
Well, and you know that I played Mrs. Pierce at Palm Springs High School. And, oh, gosh, yeah. Well, that's just a wonderful show. A wonderful show. All the end when he's realized what has transpired and, you know, he's grown accustomed to her and all that. And then she walks in at the last moment and you only can guess what's going to happen because they don't resolve it exactly. But that's a beautiful moment. And I just love that show. And
I do too.
I know you have.
Gwendolyn?
I have one.
Okay.
I actually got to see the revival where Richard Burton played Arthur in New York. And Arthur is one of my heroes since a little girl in the closet with a flashlight on a book. When he says, run, boy, run, boy, you could have gotten buckets out for the tears I let go.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was a moment in my life.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah, I wish I'd had those. But, you know, I always lived
in Southern
California.
If you can't see the Broadway play itself, we're mm-hmm. lucky to live in an age right now where they have record, you know, on YouTube, you can see numbers recreated for the Tony Awards, for instance, where people, you know, when they're nominated, and
you understand why Broadway is still going and it's still powerful, and it's when they show things like our friend who died, who was in that wonderful show. Help me with the name, because I'm terrible on names. He was in TV stuff, but then he... Well, it's all right. I'll think of it and I'll write it to you. But.
Okay. What I was going to say was
but
I
right
have...
Right after, not long after the Grant or Tony, and he did this wonderful performance, and he was in a show, and then not too long after
Grand
that
Hotel.
He died.
You mean Grand Hotel?
With
Jan. Are you talking about Grand Hotel? Okay.
I'm talking about
gonna...
that actor who was
Michael Jeter.
Oh, he was in the movie where they killed the little rat and they were in prison and he was
Michael Jeter.
Yes, that's it. I did lose it.
Yes, you did.
I did lose it because he was so wonderful.
Right, a brilliant actor. What I was going to say was a couple of people said, what are your favorite musical numbers from Broadway? And I posted some of them. I put links on my Facebook page. And for me, one of my favorite moments, and it's funny, the great writer and comedian Steve Hayes happened to say the same thing. Grand Hotel, if you get a chance, Grand Hotel, Let's Raise a Glass with Brent Barrett and Michael Jeter. It's absolutely one of the most beautiful, and it's directed by Tommy Tune. You've got to see that. You can YouTube that. That's one of my favorite. Clever Mademoiselle from Coco. The Loveland number from Follies. Good Morning Baltimore, the original from Hairspray. It was genius. Plays, my favorite plays of all time, those were among them, The Search for Intelligent Life in the Universe with Lily Tomlin. That was one of the most amazing evenings of theater ever. The Belle of Amherst with Julie Harris, directed by Charles Nelson Reilly. Genius. And this is one of the most outstanding ones of all time, Little Shop of Horrors, the original play with Ellen Green on 2nd Avenue at the Orpheum Theater. That was when it was a little, no-budget play in the Orpheum Theater in the East Village, back when the East Village was funky. I'm telling you, Howard Ashman, God, he wrote the most amazing music. Little Shop of Horrors, the audience sat in that little theater, and people between each number, it was the same thing with Hairspray, after every number with the applause, strangers would look at each other and shake their heads and shrug and say, have you ever heard something so happy and uplifting?
Yes.
And that's what Little Shop of Horrors was in the original Little East Village production.
Yes.
That happened.
And you know, I told you, that's my friend Albert Poland. That's his show. So you need to, you need to do something with him because
he has so
much Broadway history in him and you would have so much in common, and you would love it. That should be a show you should do with him.
Well, when you
and
call, when you speak to him again,
he started the Judy Garland fan club, for crying out loud. He, as a high school student, and this is the greatest story, he got on the phone, he got an operator, and the operator was into it, and this is the days when you had to use a long-distance operator, find Judy Garland in Hollywood. And she went to restaurants, and, she really went out of her way to help him. And finally, he got through to her, and she was so delightful, and she was so thrilled. Oh, a fan club for me? Can you imagine?
That's sweet.
He's, like, out of his mind. Anyway,
When you speak to him again, please give him my love and my admiration for both things, and especially for Little Shop of Horrors, because that just what an achievement that is. I'm looking at the time, and Gwendolyn and I have to sign off. Jan, thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome, honey. Love you always.
You have a great week. Let's all cross our fingers for tomorrow night, and we'll hope for the best, and I will see you next Monday.
Well, we voted for our Dianne Feinstein and our wonderful congresswoman, but, you know, we'll see.
All right. Well,
okay.
Listen, we've got to run. Folks,
okay.
Jan, I love you. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay.
Gwendolyn,
mm-hmm.
I will see you next Monday. We'll see each other next Monday. The show went right by. It was so quick. But we talked about some fun things. I will see you next Monday, and we will hope for the best tonight, won't we?
Everybody get out there and vote. And that's about all you can say, isn't it? Urge.
Exactly. So let's all get a good night's sleep, do what we're supposed to do tomorrow if we haven't already, and we will hope for the best. Good night, everybody. I'll see you next week on Come Now, Don't Sulk. And remember, our sponsors were DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Good night, Gwendolyn. I love you. Sweet dreams.
Good night. I love you, Mommy.